Hey out there, everybody, and welcome to Caffeination 282, the Settle Down edition here at the Caffeination Podcast. If you've been listening to this show for a little while, then you realize that there are ebb and flows in everything that we do, and this just happens to be a little bit of an ebb. The excitement in the city is kind of winding down after a great run from one of our sports franchises, the Philadelphia Phillies, so it's kind of a strange time. For the first time in a long time, there's really no quote-unquote must-see TV. One thing that's binding everyone in the city and everybody in the surrounding area, so it's kind of fun to get back to normal life for once. It's been a little while, so today's episode we're going to be settling down everything, calming the content. We have a lot of great stuff to talk to you about. We have a lot of tech craft, a decent amount of caffeine and food, and then, as always, we will head you out on your way. So up first in today's show, you're going to hear about any and all of the following topics: writing, audiobooks, hearts, pumpkins, we're even still doing that, NetHack, robots, Legos, logos, opulence, and coffee. You know, it's kind of a diverse little section here, so hopefully everybody's going to enjoy what we got coming up here. Before we got on into it, I did want to let you know that we are considering changing the logo here at the Caffeination Podcast. I've been working on something for a while. It's actually something I drew in chalk in front of my house and kind of really took a shine to, I guess is the easiest way to say it. Basically, it's a coffee bean with the RSS logo kind of melded together, so I think that's what we may end up going with. I'm looking for a little bit of feedback here, what you think on the logo. It's going to be in the show notes. It's going to be on the homepage for a little while. So we're looking for feedback. Do you think it's a good idea? Do you think we should stick with the way that we had everything originally? So just let me know what you think. All right, let's see what else we have up front and personal before we get on into it. NaNoWriMo, the National Novel Writing Month, is continuing. I'm doing all right so far, but it's only been 2 days, so you have to give me some time before I mess up. The idea is to have roughly 12,500 words per week, 50,000 words by the end of the month. So far I'm a little bit ahead of schedule because I actually started with like a half a chapter or a chapter beforehand. So what you need to know about it is, if you are interested in fantasy novels or things with elves and dwarves and all that other kind of stuff, there's going to be an audio podcast of the book. What I'm going to be doing is releasing per week, so this is going to last longer than November, at least one chapter recorded sometime during the week. I'm not sure yet what I'm going to be doing. It's going to be linked over at paulrmuller.com. It's probably going to be /novel if I get it correct. But I have a good idea or good feeling for that this is actually going to help me with the character development and a lot of other stuff. So if you're going to be interested in that, I'll put a link up as soon as the first episode is live. And I'm always looking for feedback on what people think of what I'm doing. So, all right, before we get too much further into it, we did want to remind you that the Caffeination Podcast is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. All the other member shows have agreed to create child-safe, family-friendly, and educational content, and they're all located at techpodcasts.com. And before we get on into the actual meat and potatoes, we did want to take just a second to talk to you a little bit about our sponsor. If you have to travel for business, I have great news. There is an easier and more affordable way to go about your business. GoToMeeting, the award-winning service that lets you hold meetings over the internet with people in multiple locations. Just log on to GoToMeeting.com and start meetings with a click. Instantly, everyone sees your computer desktop on their screen. It's like you're meeting in person, but with less expenses and much less time consuming. Meet from your office, your home, your hotel room, anywhere, anytime. Plus, you can hold as many meetings as you want for one flat rate. Try GoToMeeting free for 30 days. Just visit GoToMeeting.com/tech podcasts. That's GoToMeeting.com/tech podcasts. Do more and travel less with GoToMeeting. I'd like to thank GoToMeeting for being a continued sponsor here at the Caffeination Podcast. They allow us to do all the fun stuff that we do. Moving right along into the content, there's so much stuff that's been happening around here, and I just decided that, you know, I needed to pile even more information and more work onto what I'm doing. So the National Novel Writing Month thing's been good so far. And one of the things I wanted to talk to you about before we got on into the content on today's show is one of the things that I've heard over and over again, whether it's you're trying to become a better artist, you're trying to become a better writer, podcaster, whatever you're trying to do, they say you should do it for a couple minutes, a couple, you know, like a half hour a day. I've heard a lot of the architecture professors say that, you know, If you'd like to become a better hand artist, if you'd like to become better at drawing buildings and drawing things that you see, then there's no way that you can just pick up a brush or a pencil or whatever and go about your business. You need to actually practice. So every day, draw something. And I've heard a lot of people say about writing. Writing becomes easier, things become easier, and finding the right words become easier if you do it every day. So that's really what I'm trying to get out of this. Even if the novel turns out to be complete and utter horse manure, then there's no worries about it. You know, I've actually completed something. So that's what I'm trying to do here. So if you were over at NaNoWriMo, which I kind of hate the name, I gotta tell you. If you're over there and you're trying to do the same thing, please look me up. My name's Caffeination, as per usual, and we can become whatever the buddy system is over there. I don't even know. So if you're interested, just keep checking in, and we will eventually post the link for what I'm doing over there. All right, TechCruft section is going to start the ball rolling here, as per usual. There are tin men everywhere currently rejoicing as a new artificial heart is being tested. However, this one's going to cost you a cool $192,000. It uses pig tissue. It uses parts from satellites. It uses every kind of crazy newfangled gizmo you can imagine, but it is a completely self-contained and operational heart. I don't know how big the person that they're going to be putting this in is, but it is a massive heart. It is a piece of machinery that looks like it's roughly twice the size of a standard human heart, and being that human hearts are kind of squishy, and humans are kind of squishy, you'd think that the piece that's trying to replace it would actually be squishy as well. Not so much, but I mean, it's a huge step forward with where everything has been in the past. I mean, this thing apparently uses all kinds of pressure and sensitive gauges to actually monitor and change your blood pressure based on need and based on a whole bunch of other different factors. And I really kind of think it's interesting because they're using polymers and they're using other different technologies than they've tried before. I mean, polymers have probably been tried before, but maybe just not in this exact fashion. And the funniest thing, I guess you could always look at the attempt to create an artificial heart the same way you could kind of look at the attempt to create the airplane right off the bat, because everybody looks at nature and they say, okay, how can I emulate nature exactly? And they try and they go, and it just doesn't work, because you can't emulate nature, because there are systems involved in emulating nature that are just not capable of being reproduced through technological means right now. So if you have to find the way around to get the same result as nature, but through a technological sense. So, I mean, this looks really cool. They've had some interesting successes in animals, but at this point, there's no human test cases that they were talking about. But $200,000, I mean, people, they're saying this is an incredibly expensive price. But you know what? When I'm looking at it, I'm not saying that, you know, the human life is worth less than $200,000. Some people is, some people are not. But what I'm saying is that when you're looking at this, you know, brand new bleeding edge technology, I don't really think you can throw a price tag out on it, because that's not just parts and labor. That's just the parts. You also have to pay a highly skilled professional to crack open the hood, so to speak, and pop one of these babies in. And I'm pretty sure there's not too many of the people that are currently working on this model of engine. And I think we've taken the car metaphor as far as we can there, so we're just going to let that go gracefully into this good night. All right, up next we have the 10th annual NetHack tournament. Now, NetHack, in case you are unaware, is a complete ASCII game. I mean, there are other versions that have graphics, but this game is the longest in development game currently available. It has been in development since 1986. It is one of the most complex and complicated games that I've ever seen. It is considered a roguelike game in that there was a game before it called Rogue, where you basically did all the same things you do in NetHack. But for everybody else out there who's not familiar with the genre, what it is an RPG. It's a role-playing game, turn-based, so that things do not happen unless you push a key. Because so literally, you could start a game, wait 50 years, come back, as long as the power hasn't been cut, you're still waiting there, waiting to take that first step. Nothing else happens during that time. So it's really cool in that way. But it is unforgiving. It is as unforgiving of a mistress as a game can possibly be. There are no checkpoints. Yes, you can save, but you have to resume right from where you are. However, if you die, there's no going back to a checkpoint unless you have managed to move the files around and done something on the external side of the game. If you die, you go back to the beginning. That is it. There is no do-over. There is no, oh, no, I really didn't mean to drink that. It's completely, you know, back to square one. So it's really a challenging game. It is a great game, in my opinion. And there have been different versions throughout the years. It takes its cues from absolutely everywhere in literature. And if you've never played it, I highly suggest you take this opportunity to go on over there and check it out. NetHack.org has all of the downloadables for any system you can imagine. I have it on Mac. I have it on PC. I have it on Linux. At one point in time, I even had it on my Pocket PC. It's very small on the Pocket PC, so it's a little harder to read. But all of the commands are done through typing, and not like Zork where you're saying, you know, look east, look west. It's much more single letter commands and other things like that. It's a very complex system, but if you learn how to do it, it is one of the most rewarding games you will ever play. That's all I'm going to say. There is a contest every year in November, much like the NaNoWriMo, where from November 1st through 30th, they allow you to attempt to complete the game, which is your character ascends, so to speak. You basically become a demigod within the confines of the game. And despite the fact that its name is NetHack, there is no network component to it, so it's not like you're playing in a realm with other people. The net originally was the term put in there because it was developed and designed over the internet or over the network by different people in different locations. So half the people who've designed this, half of the dev team, have never even met each other. So it's really kind of an interesting concept in this day and age. All right, up next we have a little article about space debris. Now, you know what? If I'm NASA, every time I throw something out of the shuttle, I'm pretty much assured that it's eventually going to come back down. I mean, the stable orbit that they talk to everybody about satellites and everything, we always know that, much like any other entropic system, it eventually degrades. And the strange thing about it is when they start to say, oh yeah, by the way, there might be something crashing to Earth. Now, usually when you think about might be something crashing to Earth, maybe it's a tool, it might be a bolt, something else that's going to burn up in the atmosphere on reentry. This, however, is a 1,400-pound ammonia tank deliberately jettisoned by hand. So basically somebody chucked this thing out from the robot arm in July 2007. It is supposed to land sometime over the next couple months or weeks or days. They don't even know. They don't know when it's coming in. They don't know where it's coming in. And they've estimated sizes of this tank anywhere from the size of 1.4 ounces to 40 pounds. So this is going to be objects slamming into the Earth at somewhere around 100 miles an hour. So if, for those of you who are not in Imperial measurement land, that's roughly 40 grams to 17.5 kilograms and 161 kilometers per hour slamming into the Earth. And they don't know where it's going to happen. So this could be, you know, one of those fateful incidents where you go out in the morning and you find your car has been imploded by a piece of space debris. However, the only good thing when you really think about it is the fact that 3/4 of the planet is water, so chances are it's going to hit some water. However, the standard warnings do apply. If you see something that you think fell from the sky, do not approach it, especially if it's steaming and left a crater somewhere. I don't really think my first inclination would be walk over to a piece of space junk and say, ooh, I'm going to pick this up and put it in my pocket. But apparently some people need to be told more than once. And these are probably the same people that you need instructions on the side of toothpicks for. But that's neither here nor there. I just wanted to kind of put it out there. If you see a smoking crater in your yard, probably call somebody. Maybe put a little bit of a caution tape around it. But don't really go near it. Don't play around with it. There are bad things that have possibly happened to it and could happen to you if you intend to play with it. So I just wish there was a little bit more of a good answer with there. And you don't really like to hear people from NASA say, yeah, well, we have no clue where it's going to land, and we don't know when, so it's just not good enough for me. All right, up next we have a RoboFish. Yes, the robots have attempted once again to take over the waves. This is called the RoboFish. It is entirely available over at Hackaday. You can download all of the CAD files associated with it, which is one of the things that I think is the coolest part about it. Yes, we've seen robotic fish before, and these all seem to be very interesting little self-contained devices that allow them to propel themselves through fluid of some sort. This operates much more along the lines of a submarine and complete with the wings instead of fins. So it has like dive planes, has little ailerons and flaps that move up and down. And I'm pretty sure there's some kind of bladder that allows it to take on water, jettison water to raise or lower through buoyancy. But it's kind of interesting and kind of cool that they're actually releasing, you know, open source style, all the CAD files. So it pretty much every component you can sit there and play around with. I think this would be a really interesting task for a bunch of engineering students. Take these already working CAD files, say basically these are components for a robotic fish. You need to be able to do something else with them. Extrapolate these into a different design concept. I mean, people already do it in the business world as it is. This is a really cool example of something that would be, I don't know, I think just fun to play around with. So I wanted to pass it along to people out there. All right, going from incredibly simple and awesome and open source to incredibly expensive and high-end, how would you like to have your very own train, or at least have your kids have their very own train, which rides on 30-inch in diameter track? I don't really understand how this is going to work out, but if you have $4,100, then you too can create your very own ride-on rail set for your children. But the funny thing is, the rails aren't electrocuted or anything. They're not electrified, rather. Everything works through a hand crank. So your child's actually doing a hand pedaling motion to actually take them on or around the track. They don't really, that wasn't 30 inches in diameter, it was 30 feet. So they don't really say what the gauge of the actual track is, except it looks to be somewhere around the width of a foot or so, and the kid's sitting there, and a kid's up to 100 pounds kid sit in this thing. It's a cast aluminum body with cast iron wheels. It looks pretty cool. I don't really see a lot of people paying for this. However, I do think that this would be kind of an interesting attraction in an amusement park or something like that. I mean, because considering what it is, it's relatively low end, and if you could buy two or three or four of these, you could probably make a decent profit charging like a buck or two for the kids to get on there, because, you know, there's other rides in the park, but I just think this is a really neat idea when you don't consider it a personal toy, when you consider it more of like a community event or something like that. I just think it would be kind of fun to send the kids around there, because not only that, but they're off the grid. There's no electric required. I'm pretty sure the OSHA regulations for something like this are probably a little bit more lax than they are if you need to hook power up to it and there's not an element of human power to it. So I just thought it was pretty cool and wanted to pass it along. And it also dovetailed quite nicely into the next little thing we had here, titanium tricycles. Now, I don't know how much money people have in these current hard times that we're seeing, but I also don't really understand the opulent gifts that are being pushed out there, except for the fact that maybe there's, I don't know, maybe 1, 2, 4 people left on the planet who can actually afford these things with somewhat regularity, enough to actually produce their own line of products. I mean, I'm pretty sure everybody can understand saying, okay, yes, there's a solid gold iPhone or something like that, because it's not mass-produced. It's a one-off kind of production thing for the one person who's stupid enough to buy it. But moving right along beyond that, you see, these things are production models. Like the train itself, that is a production model. There's some kind of business model attached to that where they say we're going to sell X number of trains this year to keep the company afloat. And the same thing goes for this. This is a $2,500 tricycle. Yes, a tricycle. The only thing that I can imagine this being good for, because it's very well near indestructible, is it has a carbon fiber seat, a titanium frame to it. And my son has a Batman big wheel, has lots of really great and fun noises that he plays over and over again, which is why it's in the garage instead of upstairs right now. But when he took it outside for the first time, the big kids in the neighborhood proceeded to sit on it, and, you know, it was a little irritating as a father. You're sitting there going, you know, you're going to wreck the kid's big wheel. He's not even 2 yet, and you're, I don't know, maybe 10, and sitting on it and trying to pedal it, and you're wondering why it's not working. The only good thing about having a titanium tricycle is that those kids would not be able to break it. So, literally, you could do whatever you wanted to this thing, and it's indestructible. So, I like that about it, but at the same point in time, nobody, and I mean nobody, needs to spend $2,500 on a tricycle. You shouldn't spend $100 on some of the tricycles that are out there. I just thought it was kind of ridiculous and wanted to pass it along to people. Up next, something a little bit more techie, a little bit more geeky. Mac users can now use the Netflix Watch Instantly feature, which is something I'm incredibly happy about, because I'm not often in my basement down in the caffeination lair with ready access to a PC. Most of the time we end up using the Mac laptop that we have in the house upstairs. So if the wife is watching some kind of program upstairs that I really don't want to watch. But at the same point in time, you know, I'd like to see if I can watch a movie or something like that on Netflix, or the kids watching Cars for the 615th time or something like that. I can pull movies up on here and watch them. Or I could do it in reverse and pull kids' movies up on here and have that watch, you know, have the boy watch them while I watch sports or something on TV. I think that'd be kind of fun. So it always irritated me that the way that the licensing system worked, you couldn't run the watch instantly on a Mac. So this is for beta users. You have to sign up for it. It will be doing that, and I will be reporting back to you. Hopefully, I'm accepted into the beta. I don't know how it's actually going to work. But I'm really kind of excited. Yes, it uses Microsoft Silverlight, but I don't know what a lot of people are complaining about. I didn't have any problems with Silverlight during the Olympics. In fact, I thought it was a relatively clean interface for viewing video. So while it's not high def, I'm also not one of those people who says, oh, you know, I can't watch that. It's not in high def. I know a lot of people out there who are high def snobs. You know, they turn their nose up at things and say, oh, I can't watch basketball like this. You can't see the grain in the wood. And I really say to those people, say, well, why are you watching the grain in the wood? You should be watching the play of the athletes involved. You don't need to see where the puddle of sweat is. You just need to know that they're going to send the lackey out with the mop. That's all. You know, I love watching things in high def, but I don't think I would ever eschew watching it because it wasn't in high def. You know what I mean? All right, moving right along to something a little bit less geeky, but a little bit stranger. This is a sound idea. It's bonsais and desktop boomboxes. This looks to be more of a design piece, like a concept piece, but it's a series of ergonomically shaped speakers that sit on your desktop and can join join speaker to speaker, and they can form kind of like a little chain, but they also look to be made out of recycled materials, and they have a very interesting little design adaptation on the top of them. There's a tiny little pot for a tiny little bonsai, or you could also use a tiny little pot for pea plants or whatever else you wanted to do. I think this is really neat. I like this idea. Basically because I love having plants in my office. Now, I think there's only one plant down in the caffeination layer right now, and it's a plant we rescued from outside, but beyond that, I gotta tell you, my office and work is a veritable greenhouse. I have a fantastic window with lots of natural light. So not only does that help with you know, keeping the artificial light bills down, but it also helps me grow all kinds of crazy cool plants in there. So I like this idea. I don't know how well it's actually going to transform into reality, but we'll see. It seems to be kind of a fun little concept piece. All right, up next we have a little bit more winter season. You know, the weather has started to turn cold around here, so you got to start to take in all the different pieces of snow warfare that are currently out there, because you want to have them in time for when it actually does snow wherever you are. Now, the first thing up we have here is Snowball Blaster. It's a it's a slingshot piece, so it basically involves a gun-like object that you place your arm into, so there's actually a little bit of a brace that goes around your forearm. Then there's some kind of slingshot device that goes across the top, and there's also a snowball former at the top, so you put little pieces, or you put a bunch of snow up in the top, then you close the top and it forms perfectly formed snowballs. Probably crushes them down into somewhere around ice consistency, and then it has a catapult inside that allows it to shoot up to 50 feet. However, I'm pretty sure if you launched one of these at point blank range, because you know someone's going to do it, you're going to leave a welt at the very least and probably a few broken bones or something. I got to tell you, this is awesome. This would have evened the playing field, because I was not very popular on the street growing up, and I had quite a few times where I was kind of the focus of a large barrage of snowballs. I'm pretty sure if I had had a snowball blaster at my side, I would have been able to somewhat level the playing field here. So it's pretty cool that some of the taglines that I've seen about this. But the article that we linked up is from over at device.com, and the byline reads, Snowball Blaster means mutually assured destruction for your wintertime enemies. So much like the water blaster that we had before, which shot actual globs of water somehow. This is shooting snowballs, but you have to make your own. But it comes equipped with a very easy canister device to allow you to do that. It's not automated by any stretch of the imagination, but it still seems pretty cool. It's only $30, so it doesn't seem to be too far off the Super Soaker price point. If you remember back in the early 90s when they started having the different kind of pressurized water pistols come out, they were around the $100 for the higher end models. So the ones that everybody ended up having were like $10 to $15 to $30. So this is right around that price point. The next little thing we have up here for your chilly weather enjoyment is not necessarily warfare, but it's more of a make love, not war kind of thing. It's called ear toasters. I had often wondered why nobody had done this before, but they're actual earbuds built into ear warmers. I'd seen them in hats before, and I'd seen other mods from Instructables and other things like that that allowed you to put earbuds like in the fabric of a hoodie or something like that to allow you to listen to music somewhat clandestinely. But this seems to be a little bit more on a different wavelength. This is very nice, a very interesting finish. Also $29.95. They're called stereo toasters, and they're lightweight fleece lining with built-in earphones. So I don't know how long the cord is. That's something that I always have problems with. Whenever you get a different pair of earbuds or something like that, the length of the cord varies too much, and I have relatively long arms. So if I have my iPod at the end of my arm, half the time the cord doesn't actually go to the end of my arm, and I end up having to like put it in a pocket or something else up high. So we'll see exactly how long it is, not really sure, but I love the idea, love the concept, and wanted to pass it along to you. All right, up next we have another totally cool link. This one's from Norbert Davis over at totallycooltech.com. Apparently, a giant Lego man has washed ashore, and it's washed ashore in England. The funny thing about it is that this is the second time this has happened, and I had remembered something similar to this happening before, but I didn't have the story available, and I think it actually didn't make the cut on one of the caffeinations. So I wanted to kind of bring back both articles. There seems to be some kind of odd war going on, a cultural war of sorts going on over in the European area of the planet. It's between the Danes and the Brits. Recently, as of August, there was a sighting of a giant 8-foot-tall Lego man with the phrase emblazoned across his chest, "No real than you are." No, yes, that is not a sick, that is not a changed of anything. It was completely nonsensical, and apparently it was surmised at the time that it possibly had fallen off a cargo ship. However, it also, somewhat coincidentally enough, had kind of coincided with the 30th anniversary of the creation of the minfigure, the Lego man himself. And apparently in response to the giant English bearing Lego man, there was an 8-foot-tall Lego gentleman washed ashore that had a Danish phrase emblazoned across the front. And I don't really know what this one said, because it didn't see or didn't really say what it was, but some sources are kind of saying that it was somewhere along the lines of the "no real than you are," but there wasn't a translation given. Unfortunately, there wasn't even a good shot of the front of the Lego man here. I need to actually kind of see if there's a different story link or somewhere around there, but I gotta tell you, it's awesome to see these giant Lego men, and I would not kick one of these out of my house. I would really love to actually put it in the backyard or something, because I'm pretty sure it would freak all the neighbors out, but I don't really know what to make of them. I mean, it's fantastic that it's been 30 years of this guy, but at the same point in time, it's more than a little creepy. So, moving right along here, in the middle of the Lego section at the Caffeination Podcast, Lego Disneyland, no price gouging here. Unlike the current Disneyland or Disney World, where they charge exorbitant fees, this is a gentleman who wanted to recreate as many of the attractions as possible in Lego form. And there appears to be, I think, their HO scale trains actually going around it. What makes it even better is that the train set itself is made of Legos. So I think this is actually like a Lego branded train set you can get, which may or may not end up actually being an HO grade. But you're looking at this, and this is just unbelievable. They have Fort Wilderness, they have a bunch of the different rides, they have Downtown Disney, they have I don't even know what all of the stuff is called. I was at Disney once a long time ago, but it is a beautiful rendition in complete Lego glory. So it seems to be a lot of really interesting stuff coming out with Legos recently, and they've of course, for Pirates of the Caribbean, they've used the pirate ship Lego set, and there's a whole bunch of other sets that they basically imported and kind of expected people to shift their view and shift how they saw what the Lego set was supposed to be and kind of fit them into the aesthetic elsewhere. But at the same point in time, I'm pretty sure a lot of the pieces were painted to actually match things, but it's still really, really cool. So Oh, wow. Now I see it. I'm sorry. Instead of painted bricks, this is a little sub-note. Apparently, the slight mauve-tinted bricks is a discontinued brick color. So I did not know that Lego ever discontinued anything, but apparently it was highly used in the creation of this model. So you too can head on over there and check out this discontinued brick color and this massive Lego Disneyland. And there's a lot of really fun stuff, but that about wraps that one up. Last little thing that we have for you here is a return to the previous Halloween posting, the previous pumpkin carving stuff, where we're talking about a Food Network challenge. There's a pumpkin carving challenge. Now, this is something I was unaware that they had, and I have to see if it's actually on TV, because I love the Food Network challenges. This contest was won by a gentleman by the name of Ray Villafane, a sculptor for DC Comics. There's two different kinds of Food Network challenges that are out there. There's the single event, and then there's the multiple event. They usually do the multiple events where whatever you're trying to do is a little bit shorter in length, and they try and stretch it out to somewhere around a 6 to 8 hour competition, no matter what it is. So if you're making like a chocolate cake or a birthday cake or sugar art or something like that, you have to create a sculpture piece, and they'll give you like one set of ideas, and it has to be like a 6 hour long event. Or if you're doing something like pumpkin carving like this is, then they give you three different events. So they had to complete in, let me see what they are. Part one was a traditional Lego traditional jack-o'-lantern. Part two was a 3D sculpture, and part three, which was worth half of the points, was a freestyle competition. So it is, I gotta tell you, it's unbelievable the stuff that Mr. Villafane has created. The first one is a roaring predator from the Predator fame, actually. The next one is a 3D skull popping out of a pumpkin. And these are the kind of things where you look at and you wonder exactly what tools they used. I'd love to be able to watch the episode just because I want to see what tools the man actually used, because I know no matter what I have around here, I'll never get anywhere near what these are, but it was just insane to see the skills displayed as such. So I want to pass that along. And before we get too much further, there are a couple people who actually wrote in, and I must apologize, I mispronounced the Celtic holiday, the Wiccan holiday of Samhain as Samhain, because I was in a bookstore recently, and I was talking about this. Actually, it was a couple months ago, but I was talking about this, and I was saying Samhain, and I was corrected by a very counterculture-looking person very vehemently and told me that I was very ignorant and that I didn't know what I was talking about. So I deferred to her, and I kind of passed on the other information that I had seen, and I kind of went to that pronunciation, and I stand corrected. And thank you very much to everybody who emailed me about it. And the thing that I'd like to thank you about more so is that you did so very nicely. Thank you very much. Everybody who emailed me was very, very nice about it. They said, you know, I'm not sure if you understand, but this is how it's pronounced. Then they gave me the phonetic spelling and their phonetic sound of it. Thank you very much. So, all right, that about wraps it up for the Tech Cruft section here at the Caffeination Podcast. Going to head in on to the caffeine and food section. We're going to run down relatively quickly and send you out on your way. Just in case you were tuning in late, this is, of course, the Caffeination Podcast. We are located over at www.caffeination.com, caffeination.com. Any comments, feedback, suggestion, or hate mail can be forwarded or sent directly to caffeination@gmail.com, and everything else is over at the website. So thank you very much for tuning in. Don't know where you still find it in the streaming, but apparently there's a couple places that still do it. All right, up first we have an article from over at energyfiend.com, a review of the Handpresso portable espresso machine. I gotta tell you, every time I see a review of this, I keep revising my opinion of the idea behind it more and more. And I gotta tell you, I would love to review one of these. I just can't afford to blow $130 on something like this. I think it's a great idea. It's a very interesting concept when you take what an espresso machine is supposed to do. You have to add the hot water to it, which is the only area of design that I think it might have fallen down a little bit on. Otherwise, it's completely independent, so you could just pump it up to 16 bar pressure and actually produce shot of espresso after shot of espresso. It's very, very good. It's about the size of a bicycle pump, and provided that you have the right temperature of water, which is very, very important to creating good espresso. You have to have the right temperature of water. Everything has to be done consistently. So I think that's the only possible area of weakness that this design actually has. But I got to tell you, it's incredibly well designed and well done. So Yeah, it's neat, but it's one of those things where I'd probably have to see one in person before I would ever give it the caffeination.com seal of approval, but I gotta tell you, it just looks really spiffy. The idea behind it seems sound, but can't really speak much on it more beyond that. All right, up next, there's a very common problem that a lot of people have when you're doing the dishes or something like that, and you throw the dishes into the sink and you fill the sink up with water to wash them, or if you have a dishwasher or whatever, you always wonder about, where the forks and the knives are actually going as they sink to the bottom of whatever you're doing. So this is an interesting way to get around that. It's floating cutlery. Yes, there's a ball of encased air that's in the middle of your piece of cutlery. It's just above the... I think this is a great idea. It just seems to be improperly placed. So it looks like a bobber, like a fishing bobber, as it sits across the top of the dish bin. And I think it's a great idea. They seem to all be plastic, so it doesn't really seem to be a bad idea. And you're not going to use these for your good china, but I like the idea. I think it just needs a little bit of tweaking, so I wanted to kind of put it out there. This is, of course, only a concept. It needs a little bit more tweaking, but maybe if they made a fatter handle as opposed to just a bulbous ball at the point right above the actual utensil itself, because it doesn't seem to be easy to hold the fork in this manner, so we'll see. All right, up next is a interesting little article about pedaling your way to a cold beer. This is an article from over at treehugger.com. It works on a very basic, simple heat pump. One end is hot, one end is cold. So if you have a cold beer on the one end, you can have hot coffee on the other. This is my kind of gadget. I don't think I would ever have an exercise bike similar to this to actually put in my basement or some other place. But if I had to do it, this would be what I would do, because I would definitely have the coffee on one end. You wonder if you could actually make it hot enough to actually brew coffee, not just to keep a coffee hot. So I just think it's kind of fun, and I decided to pass it along because it's more of a lark than anything else. And the next little other thing we wanted to talk to you about was actually a coffee rut. I find myself... In times of great excitement like I've had around here recently, I find myself getting stuck not just in what I'm drinking, but how much coffee I'm drinking. And you eventually get to that point where you're like, you know what? I'm drinking about a pot and a half of coffee today. My nights are too late. My mornings are too early. There has to be a way around it. So the way I've determined to break the cycle is to try and change how you drink your coffee. It's not just black coffee like I drink every day in, day out. I've switched back to the espresso, so it's like a shot in the morning, and hopefully that'll carry me a little bit further. So I'm trying to switch things up there, and I was wondering if any other people out there had different ways in which they broke their coffee rut. We're on a down cycle with the caffeine right here, so I'm getting tired earlier, and I realize that it's been so many nights of late posted episodes. If you look at the last 5 or 6 episodes, none of them have been posted before 1 in the morning, and we're hoping to beat that because it's not even midnight yet, and the episode's 99% done. Just a little bit of editing, and we'll be out. So just wanted to kind of see if anybody out there had a different idea and how to break out of a coffee rut. All right, and then the last little thing we have here is just basically a video link. It's a joke. It's drugs and spiders. They have a spider that's on marijuana. They have a spider on LSD. They have a spider on caffeine, and they have a spider on crack. It's done as a very straight-laced documentary until you get to the spider on crack, so I just want to kind of... you might think that something's a little bit different when you start to see the spider on THC actually builds a hammock instead of a web, but it's well done. It's kind of fun to sit there and watch, so I just decided to pass it along. Hopefully you enjoy it. That about wraps it up here for today's Caffeination. This has been episode number 282. A little bit long on content. Hopefully you enjoy the stuff that we had for you here today. And I promise things are going to start smoothing out in the content and the delivery. You're going to get back to the quality that you are used to. Hopefully it hasn't dipped too much with the really late posting of episodes. I'd like to thank everybody for listening. This and all the other episodes just like it, except with different stuff and better content, are over at www.caffeination.com. That is caffeination.com. This was a Caffeination podcast, and you are incredibly nice for having listened to it. Thanks for listening, everybody. Stay caffeinated, people.